So as Alan mentioned, my talk is entitled Typesetting with Masonry. You can see from my contact information that it's a little bit different from the contact information that was at TUG 2010 in San Francisco. And you may wonder why I keep flittering with my email addresses. Well, one is my vocation, this bespoke spaces company. Bunceesworld.org is my avocation, it's my passion. So for the purpose of this talk, I've got this as my contact info. I'd like to begin with a very, very simple thought experiment, and I hope you'll humor me. Imagine, instead of sitting where you are, looking towards the front of the room, looking at me, looking at the slides, that you instead transport yourself above this room, high above the ceiling. What would you see? I would contend what you would see is a two-column page with header, footer, margins, a margin note, and if we dive even further, what you would see are lines, leading. If you recall what we had in San Francisco in the banquet hall, partly due to the turnout, line leading was very constrained. We were tripping over each other. Here it's comfortable. We can even go so far as to talk about serifs, the ability for descenders, our chairs to be pulled back, the wiring to be easily manipulated without us tripping over them. You have a comfort in this space that's very akin to a well-typeset page. Now, if we move from composition to production, we have a theme of sustainability, a continuity of material, a consistency in typeface. We have bamboo on the floor. We have bamboo as a material on the chairs. We have bamboo as an adornment on the walls. And if you go outside and look at the bamboo benches on the walkway, you'll find brass screws. An attention to detail that is uncommon both in book publishing and in construction. But all the elements are here. So why don't we move to the third aspect, which is navigation or usability. How many of you noticed as we entered from the front entrance, without a great deal of thought, without a great deal of signage, you were naturally led from the front entrance to the main building at the comfortable level, level two. And on your way, on the right-hand side, was this very beautiful teak cottage. Not unlike the woodcuts that O'Reilly Publications would put on their front cover, just to keep your interest as you open the book from the front cover to the first page when you began reading. You have the primary rectilinear forms of this building and the surrounding buildings tied together with curved forms to soften the navigation. Again, not unlike a well-typeset page. So, whilst many of these thoughts have been circulating around my brain, my head, for several years, I owe credit to two talks from TUG 2010. One was Didier's talk, which was entitled Classes, Styles, Conflicts, the Biological Realm of LaTeX. And he also navigated analogies between tech and other domains. The other was Jean-Luc's talk, which was entitled Quantum Space, Designing Pages on Grids, where he discussed spatial relationships. So unlike many of the talks this year, which have been focused on method and technique, and more of the technical aspects to tech, I'm going to zoom out and take a much more coarser granularity to typesetting. And I'm going to look both backwards and forwards. And Covey has taken the crown by his own admission for the least technical talk of this conference, but I'm going to challenge him at lunchtime for a joust, a friendly joust, because I propose to take that title away from him. I have divided typographic forms into four major sections. Those are by inscription, expression, promotion, and finally inspiration. So let's discuss typesetting as inscription. 2 years ago, I visited Kerala for the first time in the northern part of the states. There's a very, very beautiful cave structures called the Edical Caves. And they were populated by Neolithic society, and you have pictorial writing. This was approximately 5,000 BC. Another example, the Arch of Titus. The translation is the Roman Senate and the people to deify Titus, and I stress the word deified, and I'll forget the rest. The third example I have is the Qutub Minar in Delhi, where you have a mixture of Arabic and Nagari scripts. So what's the common characteristic of typographic tradition as expressed as inscription? Primarily, and not only because of the limitation of material, it was designed and deigned from the ruling classes to convey a message to the citizenry. So it's designed, first of all, to reinforce the importance of the ruling class and their special place in society. It was purposely done in materials that was to last generations. The assumption, of course, when you are part of the ruling class, that you're in perpetual ascendance, and that hasn't changed even today. Often, but not always, as a form of self-aggrandizement. Every rule has a counterexample. My next example, I hope, will show you that. And that is the very exquisite Vietnam War Memorial wall. And it is a very austere monument where typography is front and center. So if you look at the 3 points I talked about earlier, I don't think any of those matter in this case. Here is a case of typography as inscription, which is a cathartic experience. Its entire design is meant to release the repressed grief of a generation. And I think it succeeds beautifully. Typesetting is expression. So I think this is the area where you as practitioners and me as a pseudo-practitioner and primarily as an observer are most familiar with. That is the printed page. We're talking about from the Tudor age to the great age of the novel, to the modern electronic age, as we've discussed in this conference, the EPUB. So what are the characteristics? We're talking about the beginning of the printed form, the first great age of the book. We're talking about widespread dissemination, commensurate with an increase in literacy, mass literacy, and followed with the great age of the novel. I won't spend too much time here, and I'll proceed to the third, which is typesetting as promotion. Now, I imagine that typesetting as promotion, advertising, has been there as from earliest times. But when we think of typesetting as promotion, we're talking about World War II and beyond. So here are a couple of examples. So here's the American version, and here's the Soviet version, done by a very famous Soviet typesetter. What's unusual, what's idiosyncratic, is that both posters are shouting out the idea that the population should be quiet. So the type is shouting a message, but the instruction is that we should be silent. Third example, very popular, very famous, the Ford Motor Company, Coca-Cola, instantly recognizable icons. But not really icons. They're represented in type. So we've discussed typography as inscription, typography as expression, typography as promotion. The real area of focus of my talk is typography as inspiration. And keep in mind that example that I began with. My interest isn't only in simple 2D forms. but in space. And how we can traverse the worlds of typesetting and space, architectural design. So here we are, typesetting is inspiration. Frank Lloyd Wright. I have been on a pilgrimage and a quest for the homes and buildings designed by Frank Lloyd Wright, the great American architect. Frank Lloyd Wright began his architectural career in the age of the arts and crafts movement, where everything was specified, not unlike the campus on River Valley. Furniture, type, space, concrete, building materials, texture, everything came out of the head of the designer. I've just put one small representative sample of what was known as art glass in those days. There, you could spend volumes talking about his architecture, and some would say it's banal. But that aside, I hope you will see in the slants on this particular example that there is a reflection on typographic forms. The letters N, W, and M. And Frank Lloyd Wright was a typographer, but he also traversed the worlds of graphic design and typography. And from there, it wasn't much of a leap for him to go into spatial design. What constitutes a well-designed page? And equivalently, what constitutes a well-designed space? I term it something known as the admiration pause. That is, you instantly know, whether you're a practitioner in the field or not, that you have stumbled upon a page that is startlingly beautiful. What are the characteristics of the admiration pause? Here's how I define it. Awe without envy. That you can be fully engaged in the work of the typesetter, of the architect, of the designer, without a hint of envy. The other characteristic I define it by is grace without grandeur. That is, that the page was designed not to be admired from afar. The building was not designed to be admired from afar, but it was designed to be moved through, to walk through, to live through, to read the page, to understand the content, to absorb it, to reflect upon it. I wanted to just step away into the more mercantile world and just show you how typography as inspiration is being used by a large corporation, Starwood Hotels. Starwood has a number of properties, two of which are Le Méridien and W Hotels. They're branded towards very different clientele, but they use typography interestingly and in subtly different ways. We all know about branding, using type to brand a product. So here, from the brand book, you have LM100, which is this effort to define what the style of Le Méridien will be worldwide. You have certain fonts that are specified. That's not the interesting part. Up top, and I can't read it myself, but it says something to the effect that it's an edited experience. Le Méridien is designed to offer a curated hotel experience. They bring in artists, designers, sculptors, typographers to curate that experience as if it was a museum room. Why? Because they've identified the target clientele quite well. It isn't merely the person who can plunk down a credit card and pay the exorbitant sum that they charge. They've defined the person as a creative practitioner. So to what end does Le Méridien use type to inspire their design, not merely brand their hotel? Le Méridien, the word, has its roots in cartography. So they use cartographic type graphic forms to enliven the environment in which a hotel guest walks into. They go further. They decorate full walls in rooms with calligraphy, with type, sometimes localized, sometimes not. The effort is that when a hotel guest walks into a room, they're engaged in an experience that goes beyond sleeping in a bed and using the toilet. How does the Counterpart W hotel use type? Very differently. You can see from the colors, it's a little bit more hip, there's a little bit more impact, a younger look. They define the clientele for W hotels as someone international, but someone in the inn, perhaps in the entertainment industry, hipper, younger, more casual. The type is the ever-fresh Jill Sands. What they've done, though, much like that example of Frank Lloyd Wright that I gave earlier, is that they're using the angle found in Jill Sands to offset signage, lines in signage, to use them as decorative forms. So without using type explicitly as an adornment, the way Le Méridien is pushing forth, W is just abstracting angles, curves, and forms, and pushing their design onto the underlying typeface, which is the basis of the brand. Two very different ways of using typography, and probably not noticeable to the average guest. Typography as inspiration. Typography that transcends the printed page. So where does tech fit in? What I would say, and I've got an example from my talk last year. I'm just going to look this up here, pardon me. We know that the tech is more than a typesetting language. It's a system to produce beautiful documents, yes. But as CVR has so eloquently demonstrated, it is a path to lifelong learning for all of us. Part of its beauty is its depth, its capability. And since Professor Knuth is not here, I can say part of it is its obtuseness. It's difficult to penetrate. So this was the talk, this was one of the slides I gave last year in talking about Bunsey's World, methodology of learning mathematics at the primary school level. And I stated that it's often mistaken that the first approach is the only one. I'm not one of the people, and I'm sure there are several in this room, that have read the tech book, done every double bend exercise, and got it the first time around. I'm a plotter. I need to do my Hello World example and have like 19 compilers even in that example, go back. But slowly, a kernel, and if I can be so bold, of self-realization enters into the mix. The path to learning using tech is more than a technical tool. It awakens in us an aesthetic appreciation of what typesetting is, what proper typography is, what balance is, so many of the characteristics that I talked about when I mentioned the admiration pause. Boris and Leila yesterday identified some characteristics of usability: legibility, readability, comprehension. The counterparts in the world of architectural design, my list, everyone's got their own list: balance, proportion, function, clarity, appeal. How do we casually enter this room without tripping over each other? How is it that the floors are kept so clean of cabling? How is it that there's, in spite of the shallow depth of the desk, there's more than sufficient space for laptops, for diaries, for pens? How is it that the kerning of us as individuals is so balanced that we are neither hitting each other elbow to elbow, and yet we can turn around and carry on conversations casually? How is it that the acoustics of the room balances your being able to hear me, and if you whisper, the room itself doesn't resonate? There are analogies from the printed page to the space, page versus space. I'm told I'm running out of time, so I'll go quickly to the rest. There's another small concept that I won't touch on too much, but tech has always advocated this distinction that density of ornamentation is very different than density of design. Unfortunately, in the Microsoft Word world, as it is in very garish building construction, the McMansions of the West, density of ornamentation is often mistaken to be density of design. They're two different things. Now you have the opposite. You have the absence of ornamentation, sterile environments, as an indication of density of design. Neither is valid. Jean-Luc talks very eloquently in his book about white space as being a design element, not just the content, but the space around. I'll quickly run through the last few slides. So here is an example. I mentioned to you I've been on a quest in the architecture of Frank Lloyd Wright. My intent was to build or renovate a home using the principles that he had expressed in his architecture. So let me run through a few slides of my house. This is our kitchen, designed by me, including the range hood. I'm going to leave the mic for a quick second. I want to show you. Leave aside the technical consideration of the range hood offset from where the pipe comes out from the ceiling. I would like to point out this descender shape. If I could show it in the cross section, it's like this. The golden ratio is used throughout in the proportions. It is also, like W Hotels, the angle. My daughter's name is Vidya, capital V. It echoes the angle. My wife's name is Anu, capital A. My son's name is Gautam, lowercase g. There's a descender. If I were to show you a close-up here, this is pi. Pi is reflected throughout the house in its organic form and in explicit window decorations. Besides each topic, I've been throwing up these random slides of masonry, and I'm going to zoom in. I talked about zooming out for the talk, now I'm going to zoom in. This is what those random slides represent, typesetting with masonry. Euler's equation has been embedded into the house as masonry. Yesterday, Leila and Boris talked about evidence-based medicine. I must confess, I was very afraid, because now I know I have to be very careful never, ever to go near Leila's university, because I fear she and her medical staff will diagnose me with evidence-based madness. What else would you call this? Thank you very much for your time.
Okay, thank you very much. We've got time for questions.
Okay. It's rather a comment, not a question. Since you really love Lloyd Wright, I would like to mention another name. He was also arts and crafts movement leader, Eric Gill. We all know him because it's Gill's sons, of course, but he also was a sculptor and a little bit of architect and artist. And he actually tried to do what our friends Kava and CVR are trying to do here. He tried to create a sort of a shop where I would put where I do typography, artist shop, and a lot of other things inside it. He tried to do it balancing in a harmonic way. So unfortunately, he was not as successful as our friends here. But I think you might be interested in studying his works and life. It's very will be interesting for you.
Thank you, Boris. I will. I'll look it up.
Any other questions? Thank you very much.